I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. W. Kamau Bell is host of the show United Shades of America on CNN, the author of the new book, The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell, the host of three podcasts, and star of the stand-up special and comedy album Semi-Prominent Negro. He'll bring his stand-up comedy show to the Hult Center in Eugene on Friday, May 19th, and he's with me from CNN in New York. Thanks for taking a few minutes today, Kamau.
That's right, where every comic is hangs out, CNN in New York City.
Your home away from home.
Yes, yes.
Well, would you agree that awkwardness is an underrated thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think we experience a lot of awkwardness in our lives, but generally when we experience awkwardness, we're taught to run from it. We're taught to go, you know, we're taught to, go, like, you know, awkwardness makes you feel stupid or makes you feel, like, unsafe or unsure. And I've learned in my life the best thing you do is run straight through it. like Bo Jackson through Bosworth. Like, you know, you just go straight through it. Don't worry about it. You know, because ultimately if you sort of lean into the awkwardness, you're learning something about yourself and also the situation you're in or the person you're talking to. So in my life is I've gotten smarter when I've leaned into the awkwardness. Like, you know, not you know, I don't know if you know this, but Eugene, Oregon is not on every black comedian's tour schedule, but it's on mine.
So, yes, what is it about, how do you approach the awkwardness of being a black comedian doing comedy in a mostly white town like Eugene?
I mean, you know, I'm approaching it the same way I approach being a black person in a mostly white country. It's sort of like, you know, this is my experience. You may relate to this, you may not relate to this, but I think we can come together as a community and talk. And also, I know that, you know, there will be people come out who won't be white and who maybe will be excited to have somebody like me come to town and sort of speak about these things. So, you know, for me, every show is a unique experience, and I sort of like adapt and move through the show as the audience wants me to. And, you know, we figure out a way to have a good time as long as we're there in the right spirit.
And are there particular awkward conversations that, say, you and I should be having at this point?
Well, I don't know you that well, but certainly I think that all of us as Americans need to be having, you know, you need to be having more direct conversation about what's going on in this country and really get out of the whole electoral politics game and talk about, like, the issues behind these things. I think, you know, right now as we speak, Trump is speaking to the NRA, and it's just like, that's not a conversation that needs to be had, a Republican president speaking to the NRA. There's way more impressive and important conversations than that we need to be having.
You mentioned in your book that your daughter looked at Donald Trump and said, I don't like his rules.
Yes.
What particular rules?
I still haven't heard anything more salient on that in all my time talking to people. He's got bad rules. Like, that's exactly what it is.
Oh, what particular rules are those from her perspective, do you think?
She knows that if Donald Trump, she sort of knows because we've talked about it, and she's, you know, she listens a lot. She has a lot of grown-up conversation. That if his rules go forward, that people that she knows, because she goes to a very racially mixed school and a school of all sorts of different religions, will have their lives affected in negative ways. So when she hears that her Muslim friends may not be able to, you know, are afraid that they won't be able to practice their religion in this country, or she hears that her Latino friends feel like that they might lose family members, she knows those are not good rules because these are good people and she loves them and they love her. So, you know, not a lot of Donald Trump's rules have the word love in them. A lot of them have the word hate in them, or the feeling of hate and the spirit of hate.
You've distinguished racism from prejudice in previous times. Can you talk a little bit more about what that distinction is for you?
For me, like, you know, prejudice is just a feeling in your head of like, I don't know if I trust this or I have these thoughts about this. Racism is some sense of acting out those feelings. And a lot of people believe, and a lot of academics who I subscribe to believe, racism is specifically an American phenomenon that white people have practiced on people of color in this country, that everything else is just prejudice. So if a Chinese person says, I hate a black person, well, that's prejudice. Or if a black person says, I hate a white person, that's prejudice. But racism has to have power behind it, where your hate stops groups of people from getting jobs or getting better schools or sends more people of a certain group to prison. So that's really the big differences about power. Prejudice, we all walk through the streets with lots of thoughts in our head, but we don't all have a system of support behind us to enact those thoughts.
How do you go about finding humor within topics as difficult as these?
I know. Right now, I'm like, am I a comedian? I'm having a lot of interviews right now, and it's like at the end of the interview, I'm like, am I really a comedian? Doesn't feel like it. You know, I think the thing, the humor comes from frustration. Even Seinfeld said, if you're angry, something funny is happening. So I always know that, like, even if I feel sort of depressed about the things when I'm talking about them off stage, by the time I go on stage and talk about them, I will figure out some way to make them funny due to the pressure of the fact that I'm on stage doing stand-up comedy. So, you know, it's humor's about a disconnect between what you expect and what's actually happening. You know, so that's all around us. And right now, I think we're all experiencing that disconnect. And you know, some of us are experiencing the anxiety, and I sort of use it to channel humor.
Talk about a couple of those moments in disconnect in terms of filming United Shades of America, and where you found particularly rich moments of that disconnect.
You know, it's like, I think we, you know, I did the second episode of the season is in Chicago. We talk about gang violence, and that's an area that, you know, people, I grew up in Chicago and graduated from high school in Chicago, so people assume, oh, you must be very, you must know about all that culture, and you must have grown up in a neighborhood where you had to join a gang, and blah, blah, blah. That wasn't my life. So for me, you know, there's this idea that every black person in Chicago is in a gang or has been affected by gang violence, and that wasn't my life. So the disconnect is when I sit down and talk to these people, I'm a little bit worried that they're going to think somehow being talked to, because that isn't my life. And somehow, you know, as much as people from the outside just see us as a bunch of black dudes talking to each other, that from the inside, we're very different. And I was worried that they wouldn't want to talk to me and open themselves up to me, but they were very open. And again, it's an example of like prejudice. I was prejudiced against these dudes because they're in gangs, but because, you know, whatever I've been told that means. But once I sat down and talked to them, that stuff quickly went away. And that's what we got to learn, is you got to learn to let go of your prejudices when you get information that counteracts what you assumed.
I respect so much the courage you've had in diving into some of those segments of population that it's not safe to go in. I mean, I know it's not safe in the world in general, and in America, a lot less safe just to be black than it is to be white. But talking to the Ku Klux Klan, how did you approach the Klan to even make that happen in the first place?
Well, luckily, that's one of those times when it's good to have a lot of white guys on staff. we had white producers who had to have phone calls with the Klan, and I remember at the time they would get off these phone calls and just feel like they had to sage their whole body, because they were like, they had to sort of like listen to what the Klan was saying and sort of pretend to go along with it, because they were like, oh yeah, uh-huh, black people this, so can we meet on Friday, like we said, is that still available to you? So it's like they had to really do a lot of like heavy lifting and legwork, and I just sort of had to show up and do the thing when I got there. So they, you know, a lot of people put in a lot of work in all these episodes to make it really easy on me to roll out of the van and just sort of walk over and start talking to people. So it's a lot of legwork, because, you know, people want to be on TV, but they don't want to be taken advantage of on TV. And the Klan kind of had to know on some level, we're going on CNN with a black guy who's a comedian. We know he doesn't agree with us, but they wanted to put their viewpoints out there, because I think they think that if enough people see them, they will win more people to their side. We disagree on that. You know, having said that, when we recorded that episode with the Klan, you know, there was no sense. There was, you know, the election wasn't happening. We weren't even ready for the election yet, and there was no sense that President Trump was coming. So a lot of people are like, why would you focus on them? And now we look up, you know, not that long later, and many of the Klan's greatest hits of horrible ideas are in the White House.
There must be, since these issues go into every aspect of society, I would imagine that there would be issues of racism and prejudice all the way down to behind the scenes in writing, in comedy, in TV. How does that... Is that true, and how does that affect you?
Yeah, I mean, I luckily haven't been in a ton of writer situations, but certainly I know writers in comedy rooms. I know people who work in Hollywood. And a lot of times, you know, they really treat diversity like we hired that one person. You know, we got the one black guy, or we got the one woman. And really, the thing is like, you can't treat diversity that way. You have to really be looking for different viewpoints. And so when I had Totally Biased, the goal was to find different viewpoints and different people, and not about just like... There's a sense of like that funny is an empirical thing, because he's like, well, we'll get the people who've always done a good job of doing the work. But it's like, no, you need to look for new voices, and you'll get new jokes from those new voices. So for me, it's like really actively always working for diversity in all my projects is a big deal.
So what particular aspects of diversity are you looking for in the context of United Shades of America?
You know, it's really important to me. The first season, we didn't have a lot of diversity behind the camera, and it sort of made me have to sort of represent not only my viewpoint, but the viewpoint of every person of color, and also, you know, the viewpoints of people we were talking to when we were doing in pre-production. So we made some changes, and this season we have a lot more diversity behind the camera. I mean, of course, it can always be better, but it just meant that, like, when I was talking to Richard Spencer, the showrunner this year was a black guy named Donnie Jackson, and me and Donnie could have very nuanced discussions about what was going on. Without me feeling like, you know, I was like, there'd be times in the first season where there weren't other people of color around, I kind of felt like I was going crazy because nobody else really understood what I was going through. Like when I came out of the situation with the Klan, like everybody thought that was a hard situation, but it's different if you're a white guy than if you're a black person. So it really just means creatively I could be more free. I could be more free to be myself because I wasn't afraid that people would think I was crazy even behind the scenes.
How much did you learn from doing Totally Biased and its quick end that's allowed you to have a different experience so far with United Shades?
When I went into Totally Biased, I didn't know anything about the jobs of TV. I didn't know what a segment producer was, or a show producer, or an associate producer, or a PA really was. But really, Totally Biased was in some sense like worked on the show for like a year and a half, and I think I feel like, or maybe 2 years, and I feel like I got my associate's degree in TV, you know, like in those 2 years. Like, I know what the jobs are. And I think I also learned better how to be an executive producer. I'm really grateful to Chris Rock and FX that they let me be an executive producer on that show, which they had no need to, but it meant I got to be in all the meetings and see all the things and how they work. So when I went to Totally Biased and to United Shades of America, I was just smarter about how it worked. I was much better at being on United Shades because of the experience of Totally Biased, even though Totally Biased was a pretty hard experience.
And now you've become an author as well.
I know. There's too many things, sir. There's too many things. We got to let some of these things go.
Well, and the weird thing about being an author, a comedic author, is you don't get to hear anybody laugh. So what was it like trying to translate that to the page?
You know, as an only child, I'm mostly in my head. So in my head, I'm always like, this is hilarious. And then you say it on stage and nobody laughs. And you go, but I thought it was hilarious. It's actually sort of freeing to just be in your head. Like, just to sort of like let your strains of thought go wherever they want to go. And you know, the great thing about a book, there's no word count. When I write for other, you know, for websites or publications, there's a hard word count. But not with this. I could just keep on pursuing all my strains of thought. And then I had an editor who'd be like, pull it back a little bit. But it was really... I wish I had more time. I wish I had been able to really focus on the book in a more, you know, direct way. But the book feels kind of hectic to me. But also, you know, as we know, we're living in hectic times.
Oh, isn't that the case? So what else do you want people here in Eugene to know about the experience they're going to have when they come join you at the Halt Center?
That, you know, that we are going to really talk, I'm going to really speak directly to what's going on in this country, but it's going to be a good time. And, you know, if it's not funny, then it's not going to work. So for me, it's like, this is, you know, come for a group catharsis, and afterwards, we'll hug it out. You know, like, come for the comedy, stay for the hugs.
Well, we'll fill up the lobby after the show to do just that. So really appreciate all your comedy, your courage, your outspokenness, and for taking a few minutes today. I really appreciate it. W. Kamau Bell, who'll bring his stand-up comedy show to the Halt Center in Eugene on Friday, May 19th. For more information on his new book, The Awkward Thoughts of W. Kamau Bell, his CNN series, United Shades of America, and his podcasts, wkamaubell.com. Also see haltcenter.org for tickets to his Eugene show. For KLCC, I'm Eric Allen.